Okay, don't skip ahead. I'm going to talk to you about climate change. And I know it can get depressing or infuriating, but our show takes a different approach. It's Laura Lynch, and I'm the host of What on Earth, and we're all about solutions and hope. And I promise, no matter how overwhelming climate change might feel, we're with you on the journey to fix this mess. So listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. After over 160 kilometers of running on uneven terrain with elevation equal to climbing Mount Everest twice, that's the sweet sound of the finish line. Jasmine Paris is the first woman and one of just 20 runners to complete the Barkley Marathons in Tennessee. This race is infamous, known for being one of the most grueling ultramarathons in the world. Last month, she ran the course and finished with just 99 seconds to spare in the 60-hour cutoff. Jasmine Paris, hello.
Hello.
I was one of the people, there's no live stream of this race, but I was one of the people who kept refreshing social media to see whether you were going to finish in that cutoff time. What was going through your mind in the final moments of that race that we just heard?
It was incredibly intense. I guess it was intense for the spectators and people watching from home or waiting from home. But for me, it was just, you know, it was the culmination of those 60 hours of effort. And it was all kind of, all that effort was kind of condensed into that final few minutes when I knew that I really had to sprint uphill to get to the gate and I had nothing left. I was completely exhausted. So, it was an incredibly, it was a very intense moment. And I really had to sort of dig deeper than I've ever had to dig before to get myself to the gate. And the cheers of everybody waiting there at the gate were incredible. They were. It was an incredible feeling to be almost there.
There's a photo of you at the gate. You finished the race. And you're kind of hanging on this yellow gate. It looks like you are going to die.
I did feel like that actually. Yeah. I emptied it out the tank completely. I've never had to dig like that before. And all my focus was on getting to the gate. I didn't even think about what I would do. You know, I didn't think about decelerating or anything like that. It was just, you can see in the videos, I sort of hit the gate and went right over the top of it because I hadn't even, you know, every ounce of energy and breath that I had was just focused on that, getting there.
This is not a normal race. For people who don't know, explain what the Barkley Marathons are, how they work.
Well, it's, you do five loops of a forest in Tennessee in Frozen Head State Park. They're maybe roughly 20 miles long, but who knows, because you're not allowed any sort of GPS or watch or any way of recording it. You've got, in fact, no way of contacting anyone when you're out there. It's mostly off trail, involves quite a lot of navigation. The terrain is challenging, very steep. So you're either, most of the time, you're either going up really steeply and kind of pulling yourself up, or you're going down very steeply and slithering down, and there's, you know, fallen trees and things. There's sections of really quite a lot of briars, these thick brambles that sort of, and get stuck around you in various parts. And when they get stuck around your neck, you have to stop and sort of pull them off rather than trying to push on. But and all those things kind of combine to make it challenging. There's no support out on the course. When you're out there, you're very much on your own. And rather than kind of going through checkpoints to gauge your progress, you have to find books and you pull out a page that corresponds to the number you're given at the start of that loop. So, it's kind of a bizarre race, it's really more about the kind of challenge of completing it. When you're out there, you kind of work together with the people you're out there with. It's a great sense of camaraderie and spirit. I think it's a fantastic sort of atmosphere out there.
Why would you want to do something like that?
Well, you know, I mean, I love running in the hills, just because I love being in the mountains, and running that way takes me to kind of wild places and makes me happy. And I love that kind of feeling of being fit and that exhilaration of running downhill. But when it comes to specifically the Barkley, I guess I do enjoy kind of challenging myself in with something that I don't know whether I can finish it. I find that intriguing, and find it, just kind of exciting, something that I don't know whether it's possible, that's immediately a challenge that kind of attracts me, because I know that it's going to take me to kind of a place that where I'm really kind of hitting the wall, and I find that kind of fascinating at those times.
Can you describe that place? I was going to say, like, where in your mind do you go when you are running for close to 60 hours or crawling or sliding nonstop? Where in your mind do you go?
I mean, at Barclay, that the kind of one of the things about that challenge is that you can't really go anywhere much. I mean, you have to be in the moment focusing on it, because the minute you start thinking much about anything else, then you would go wrong, you see, because the navigation is such a key part of it. So I guess I think that this year, especially, I was just incredibly focused on getting to the end. And it was all, you know, just about the next step of getting to the next place and finishing the next loop. But in terms of the really hardest moments, I thought about family and especially my two children, who are 3 and 6. And it was nice knowing that they were being well looked after at home. And I imagined being back with them, and that helped in the darkest times.
Do you sleep at all when you're doing this? Like, is there the opportunity to catch a quick nap and then reload?
There isn't, no. And I think one of the people that finished this year managed to get 20 minutes between one of the loops. I didn't. I think I took I said I was going to take a 3-minute power lap before the last loop. But there isn't time. It's so close now. I think maybe historically, when the course was a bit shorter, there was time to sleep. But now you're sort of cutting it so fine anyway that nobody sleeps.
Tell me about the hallucinations. When you don't sleep and you're doing that, your body does strange things, right?
Yeah, you start to see, I certainly find that after kind of the second night of no sleep, you start to see things. In my case, it's usually animals in the woods. So like bits of wood turn into various animals, especially like broken trees and things. I saw quite a lot of big cats, lions and that sort of thing. Pigs, I mean, there are wild pigs in the park, but I was seeing different sorts of pigs. And then people in black raincoats sort of dotted all the way along the ridge above me. And at one point, they had a sort of quite sinister feel to them. And the first time I saw them, I was really confused, because you're not allowed to be off trail in that park. And I found it, you know, very odd. But then I subsequently saw them many times in the course of the rest of the race. And by then, I sort of assumed they were probably a hallucination.
I mean, as you describe this, I don't know whether you think this, but it sounds insane. It sounds bonkers.
I mean, it is a bit. Yeah, it is a bit. But then, you know, it's kind of, it's very memorable. And it's sort of like what these moments you look back on and you think that's when, you know, you really, those kind of really stand out in your life when you have times like this and you push yourself.
What were you eating? Yeah. What kind of food would you fuel yourself with?
I mean, just kind of pretty normal food. It wasn't any fancy kind of running food for the most part. I mean, I had sandwiches. I had some like omelette type. Had pizza with me. This was all to take with me: trail mix, chocolate bars, sweets. And then in the camp, I had pasta, porridge, rice pudding, bananas. Bananas always work very well.
I'd heard something about pickle sandwiches too.
Oh yeah, those. I had cheese and pickle sandwiches. Yeah, so
lovely.
Very British as well.
Yeah.
It's good to have a bit of kind of umami when you can't bear anything more sweet. So it's good.
You get invited to do this. Laz Lake, who's the creator of the Barclay Marathons, thought that you could be specifically the first woman to complete this race, even before you'd applied to run it. Did that motivate you at all, knowing that that could be an achievement?
In terms of whether it, like, knowing that I could be the first woman was certainly, like, you know, I guess that was added into my kind of thinking about the race, for sure. But my chief kind of ambition when I went there was just, I just wanted to do it for me. It was kind of proving it to myself that I was capable of it. And the fact that I, you know, did it as the first woman and proved a lot of people wrong, I think, that thought a woman could never finish. That's, that was really satisfying. Yeah, got great pleasure from that.
You have this really busy life, right? You're a mom, you have two young kids, you're working, you're a veterinarian, a senior researcher at the University of Edinburgh. In the midst of all of that, how do you train for a race like this?
It is pretty challenging. And I guess the way that I do it is just by doing most of my training early in the morning, kind of before people are awake. And so I get up at 5, I train from 5:30 till about 7:15 when I'm running during the week. And then I do strength work after that. And then it's all kind of a rush to get the kids to, you know, to nursery, my son to nursery and then into work. We kind of fit other things. You know, when I'm in the lab, I'm doing research, I cycle commute to there, and sometimes I swim here in the reservoir that we live beside a reservoir, do some wild swimming. I basically fit things in as and when I can, but the bulk of my training is done early in the morning, even at weekends, and that way I kind of still get a lot of the weekend to spend with the kids.
How much of this is about physical preparation and mental versus mental preparation? Because you can be fit and you can be strong, but there has to be something in you that in the darkest moments kind of keeps you putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, I personally think that's a huge part of this race, to be honest, because it's one of these challenges that keeps throwing things at you. And it's almost like you just have to kind of pick yourself up, deal with it and carry on and not let it set you back. So I think that's at least 50% of it's sort of in your head. It is about physical preparation as well. I did an awful lot of climbing in preparation. I was kind of doing a maximum maybe 11, 12,000 meters in the week. So that for me is quite a lot of climbing.
I think for anybody that's a lot of climbing. But yeah, continue.
Yeah, but I think the mental kind of aspect is, and that's one of the things, I guess, the reasons I'm kind of so proud of what I did there, because I definitely had really quite a tough time, especially kind of loops 3 and 4. And there were lots of times when everything, my body was telling me to stop and I really wanted to stop. And at the same time, I knew I was never going to allow myself to do that while I could still carry on. So it was a real challenge, and I'm proud that I kind of came through it and carried on.
You know how unusual that is though, right? I mean, people who do physical acts, your body tells you to stop and most people stop.
Yeah, I guess I am really stubborn, and I'd really wanted it, I guess, this year. I really felt I could do it going into it. And yeah, I guess I really believed.
There's this amazing story. You competed in the Spine race in the UK. This is one of the toughest ultramarathons in the world. And when you did this, your daughter was what, 14 months old?
Yeah, she's 13 and a half months old, yeah.
And so you were stopping in the midst of this race to pump milk for your daughter?
Yeah, I was expressing milk as I went along because I was still breastfeeding at the time. Yes, I didn't want to get mastitis and so on, as you know, obviously if you're used to feeding regularly. So she was still getting milk at home. Actually, most of it was like frozen in the freezer, ready for us. But yeah, you're right. I was expressing as I went along on that race.
How did you do in that race?
Yeah, I won it, and yeah, broke the record by quite a bit.
By quite a bit, you broke the record by more than 12 hours.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, and I think the next man behind me unfortunately had to drop out because he got hypothermic, I guess, chasing me over the hill. So then, then it was about 15 hours, I think, back to the next finisher at that time.
You're very humble in talking about how you did something extraordinary.
Thank you.
There's there's this hashtag that was applied to you during Barclays, the small European woman.
Where did that come from? Last year. Yeah, I picked it up last year. So I think there was somebody, from what I heard, there was somebody at the fire tower. You know, that's the one place on the course that kind of spectators or your crew can be allowed to see you. They're not allowed to do anything, just kind of cheer you on. And I think somebody was reporting back to Keith from there and described me as this, they was kind of gave everybody a new name and just called me the small European woman. So that kind of stuck. I understand that was kind of trending while I was running this year. So that's quite, I found that quite funny to think of, the small European woman on social media.
What do you think, just before I let you go, I mean, what do you think you've accomplished tells us about what we are capable of? What you have done is incredible. What do you think that shows about what we can do as people?
Well, thanks very much for the kind of your words. I guess, I mean, I don't really feel like I'm any, you know, I don't think I'm anything special. Like, I just think that I kind of believe, and when I dream of something, I like give it everything. I like really follow it. I really throw myself at it with all my heart. And I believe in myself, and I'm willing to go out there and give it everything. So I think if you want something, if you dream of something, then give it a go, work hard at it. In my case, it was training hard, but at the same time, then just don't let any kind of preconceptions about what you can achieve or what you're capable of influence you. Just go out there and see. I honestly think that if you do that, then you'll be surprised at what you can achieve. The kind of sky's the limit, really.
Mm. What do you do in the wake of this? Do you put your feet up and relax and eat fatty food or something like that? Do you have another race lined up?
I have eaten a lot of cake in the last 3 weeks. I'm going to have to stop doing that, I think. But I'm running again now. I'm doing like some fell racing, kind of hill racing, local hill racing in the next month or two. And then in September, I'm running a long race in the Italian mountains called the Tour de Gion, which is another one of these kind of nonstop. I don't know, it's about 330 kilometers and 24,000 meters of ascent. So I'll see quite a few people from Barclay there again. So it'll be a bit like a reunion, and I'm looking forward to that.
You're amazing. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. So many people were cheering you on from so far away as you were making your way to the finish line. And it's a great pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations and thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.
Jasmine Paris is the first woman to ever complete the Barclay Marathons, a race that spans over 160 kilometers. It has to be completed in 60 hours, and she completed it with 99 seconds to spare.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.